Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup Podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, May 30th. If you live in Illinois and other parts of the Midwest, you know we've been dealing with 17-year and 13-year cicadas for the past few weeks. The emergence of the harmless winged creatures is starting to die down. This is my fourth go-around with the 17-year cicadas, which are more prevalent in my neck of the woods. My first experience with them was way back in 1973. I loved it as a kid, and I love it now as an adult. Watching them fly after 17 years below ground is like watching me, without flying lessons, trying to land a sputtering biplane against a stiff wind. Classic stuff. I hope I get at least one more look at them in 2041 when I'm 81. I may have a better chance of that if I start taking GLP-1 weight loss drugs. And the latest on that booming class of obesity drugs is what we're going to talk about on today's show with Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchinson, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you two doing this morning? Dave?
I'm doing great, Dave. Just ducking cicadas left and right.
Good for you. You got your hard hat on. Julie, how are you?
I'm doing well. There are definitely some good hints of summer, getting some tennis outside. Life is good.
Yeah, good for you. Now, before we talk about the latest news on GLP-1 drugs, let's talk cicadas. Dave, do you have any visiting your house in Chicago? Have you seen them anywhere else?
Actually, I overstated a second ago. We still haven't seen any. I'm expecting them because Illinois is ground zero for cicadas.
Julie, you're from Florida and you live in Washington. Do you have cicadas? Are you familiar with the cicada phenomena in the Midwest?
Well, we don't have cicadas, but I was visiting Washington, D.C. a handful of years ago and got to experience the grossness, and it is gross.
Oh, come on. When I was the editor of Modern Healthcare in 2007, I brought five live cicadas into work and let them crawl around on the fabric walls of our cubicles in the newsroom for a few days. Everyone thought I was great until we came in one morning and we could only count four. Then everyone got freaked out and I got a call from HR. You know, it's always a party until someone calls HR. And, you know, we never did find the missing cicada. And now that I'm talking about it, maybe the missing cicada burrowed its way into a houseplant in that building and hatched this year. And now there's hundreds of flying cicadas in the old Crane building at Michigan and Wacker. How cool would that be? Right? And nobody knows why.
So gross.
Well, now everybody will know why. All right. Anyway, that has nothing to do with GLP-1 weight loss drugs, unless eating cicadas, which is okay, by the way, is part of your diet. Let me run down some of the latest GLP-1 news and get your reaction. A company called Intensity published an economic analysis that said Medicare could save $500 million a year if it covered GLP-1s. The cost of the drugs would be offset by savings from fewer obesity-related illnesses like high blood pressure. A survey of about 1,500 adults by the Kaiser Family Foundation found that 1 in 8 adults have taken a GLP-1. Of those who took it, 6 in 10 took it to treat a chronic medical condition like diabetes, 4 in 10 took it to lose weight. 6 in 10 said Medicare should cover GLP-1s as a weight loss treatment. A study reported on by the publication Specialty Pharmacy Continuum found that only about 1/3 of patients on GLP-1s took them consistently or according to directions. And Hims & Hers, the consumer health platform, said it's now selling injectable GLP-1s directly to consumers for as little as $199 per month. Dave, lots going on here. Why don't you take the policy angle? Should Medicare cover GLP-1s? And if so, why? And what other policy angles should we be watching?
Well, the short answer to your question on Medicare providing the drugs is yes. But before I explain why, let's discuss some brain science. Why not, right? So I've just finished Live Wired by David Eagleman, which I would highly recommend to any and all. And it talks about how remarkable the human brain is. If you think about it, our brain is entirely encased within a dark space. And so anything that we perceive, any thoughts that we have, are essentially connections firing, synapses firing back and forth, creating these sensations, these thoughts, these behaviors. And it's remarkably, as I said, adaptable, the plasticity. So we come in with an ability to learn every language, to adapt our behaviors in response to environmental feedback. And just imagine if that weren't true, if it all had to be pre-programmed, how large our brains would have to be. So it's this adaptive mechanism based on feedback and also real competition for resources inside the brain. So if you lose your eyesight, next thing you know, your hearing is grabbing up where the eyesight used to get its signals from. And why do I mention this? It's because I am just amazed by these GLP-1 drugs and their ability to get involved in this brain activity, the synapses, the back and forth, to control addictive behaviors. And everybody I know who's on these drugs considers them a miracle drug. And that also we're just at the very beginning of realizing the potential of influencing brain chemistry in ways that can have very positive outcomes. So that's the brain science part of this. Now back to policy. If these drugs are truly miracle drugs, and by the way, Julie, you were the first one ever talking about these that I heard of like 2-3 years ago.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Once again, Julie on top of the game.
Listen to the roundup.
Yeah. Why are we surprised? If they truly are miracle drugs and have the ability to dramatically reduce the incidence of chronic diseases, heart disease, diabetes, and so on in the population, why in the world wouldn't we pay for them now in order to get savings later? But here's where we run into the conundrum that is healthcare. It's what I call the reverse tragedy of the commons, which is everyone acknowledges that we need to invest in pro-health activities. Investing in GLP-1 drugs would be such a pro-health activity, and yet nobody does it, and they don't do it because when healthcare providers, when they invest in pro-health activities, they lose volume and money and profits, and they make the payers rich. And payers, when they invest in pro-health activities, their premiums go up and they lose members to other insurance companies. So nobody does it. So we need to create mechanisms that allow for the short-term, long-term, beneficial short-term, long-term trade-offs, investment short-term for long-term benefits. And that's why the government has to set an example here. It's probably a little early, although, holy cow, the evidence that's coming in is almost overwhelming. But if it is true that they have the kind of potential to decrease long-term healthcare costs and dramatically reduce the incidence of chronic disease in the country, why in the world wouldn't we figure out a way to pay for it?
Yeah, got to take the long view, like the cicada. Thanks, yep. Dave. Julie, any questions for Dave?
The cicadas. Well, Dave, you know, if ever there were a drug category where the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, enabling CMS to negotiate drug prices should be employed, you know, I would argue that GLP-1s would be it. So it's going to make more sense than other models in which they could be reimbursing it. But looking at Hims and Hers pricing, I mean, driving it into the floor, frankly, is that even necessary? Like, should CMS negotiating happen here? And what could CMS do to make sure that their money is being spent wisely?
I don't think we need the government to act here. My understanding is these drugs aren't actually that hard to produce. And looking at the demand for them, it's hard to believe that there won't be all kinds of these drugs flooding the market. A little bit like what happened with the Hep C drugs. You know, everybody was outraged at the initial price, but then competitors came in. Supply and demand took hold and prices came down very dramatically. The opportunity for that to happen here, I think, is much larger. And hims and hers is getting $200, that's probably going to seem like a lot of dough in another year or two when they're getting them for $29.99. So I don't think so. That's my gut instinct. I don't sense the market failure here that we see in other parts of the pharmaceutical industry. I think this is one the marketplace can work its magic without the government. I hope so.
Yeah, and you do have the platforms now to make that possible, right? Thanks, Dave. Julie, you take the market innovation angle here. What's up with this direct-to-consumer move? How are GLP-1s affecting digital health companies? And, you know, what's your prediction for 5 years from now?
Well, there's no doubt that GLP-1 related weight loss, you know, has led to massive consumer demand and frankly an avalanche of startups that are all over the space, and many of which frankly have, you know, pretty limited clinical expertise, which I think is kind of the scary part about the innovative landscape today. And you know, the demand has led to, Dave talked about some of these drug supply chain challenges, massively inappropriate use, poor prescribing behaviors that probably set that up, and ballooning payer costs without, you know, I would just say sufficient discernible ROI. I don't want to say that there hasn't been ROI. And, you know, if we talk to payers, as we talk to payers around the country, it is definitely number one, if not top three of every payer's list, how they're going to deal with this. So it is top of mind still. And it's been a while now, but you might remember that company Calibrate was one of the first direct-to-consumer GLP-1 telehealth providers that became literally an overnight darling. Redesign Health launched them, and they were a massive success for about a day until they couldn't fulfill orders. So, you know, their model turned upside down, and many like it, given their limited differentiation. You know, it's been hard to make companies like Calibrate work. But I spent, I don't know, a while talking to Sean Duffy a few weeks ago. And Sean's been building Omada, which is a chronic condition management company, for a long time. He's like an OG guy, OG innovator, I should say. And these are not his words, but certainly my takeaway was that, you know, he's been making the market for consumer behavior management with trying to figure out like how else to get someone else to pay for it for a long time. But with GLP-1s, he's seen consumerism literally wake up overnight. Interestingly, solutions like Omada have become a necessary control lever for the runaway reimbursement concerns that health plans and others are talking about. And solutions like his and others have instantly developed a larger market because employers and plans are now using them to try to figure out how to get the ROI back on the GLP-1s. So it's shifting the market pretty quickly. And, you know, we're seeing a number of service models beyond the Omadas of the world as well. For example, we're seeing MSOs for bariatric interventions stand up, like companies like Alant. Medical groups form around obesity management, which is not a new concept, but there are new entrants that are making a splash, like Form Health and others. There was a big article a couple weeks ago on one of the dietitian as an intervention models that would imply that, you know, those models are not working either. I believe that was Nourish or one of those. So, you know, there's a lot of experimentation happening, a lot of combining the drugs with behavior change, a lot of physician management, a lot of non-clinical management and just access points. And there's just a frenzy, frankly, with all of them because consumers are doing what they need to get to the drugs.
Right. You can't make the easy button too easy, right? I think you've used that expression before. Thanks, Julie. Dave, any questions for Julie?
I really want to kind of pick up on your conversation with Sean Duffy because I'm wondering if this consumer demand for the drug, which is insane, never really seen anything like it, far greater than the demand for Fen-Phen. Remember that when that was out of control?
Oh, yeah.
Can such enormous demand fundamentally reshape supply-demand dynamics, which Sean seems to be suggesting, within the pharma space? And I just don't think big pharma is going to be able to get away with price gouging on such a visible, in-demand, perhaps commodifying drug. Talk about a customer revolution. Is there something there?
You know, you've heard me talk about my overly simplistic view on what's going to actually drive health for the masses in this country. And for years, we focused on the inside out revolution or evolution or incrementalization of systems and plans, techifying and figuring out how to better manage and, you know, all become friends and still make money. Then there's the what I would call outside in version one, which is consumers all of a sudden wake up and don't eat the brownie or like have some sort of way of thinking about what they were born with and what that means they can do with their diet or their nutrition or their exercise. And the third is kind of the outside in that's created, right? And that's the drug, the miracle drug. And this is the miracle drug. This is the first one we've really seen that's had this kind of take. And, you know, I do feel like this will be a major shift that will demonstrate what a curative drug really looks like, even though it's not technically curative. And folks like Omada will have a different business model and enter, you know, the landscape in a different way because they've become necessary for a very long time. And they also become a triage. They become almost like a digital front door concept, if you think about it that way, where they take a bunch of members and consumers and figure out what does that member consumer really need based on how they present. So it will absolutely shift downstream, you know, hospital and other intervention costs, as we've talked about for a long time. But I just even think the innovative markets will, you know, shift in terms of how they can help address these issues.
Well, it's just such an American solution, right?
Yeah.
We rather than do the hard stuff, oh my God, we really have come up with a drug that makes us all healthier. It's amazing to me.
Yeah, it made me think of the reaction to the HPV vaccine, right? The only vaccine that prevents a deadly cancer, yet we're struggling to get kids vaccinated, right? I mean, that's an interesting compare and contrast situation right there, right? I mean, real commentary on society. Now let's talk about other big news that happened this past week. It wasn't all bad, was it? Julie, what else happened that we should know about?
Well, just a little throwback Thursday, as they say, to COVID-19, which is always fun for all of us to remember. But there was a company that formed called Q Health, C-U-E, that is now shutting down. But it was a COVID-19 testing company that made so much money during COVID. And its vision for what it could do was really quite impressive and substantial. And, you know, in the end of the day, didn't really work, whether it was black, you know, COVID revenues falling off or whatever it was. But thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Sign of the times. Interesting. Dave, what other news is worth mentioning?
I got some, you know, really rewarding news this last week. I won the National Silver ASBE Award for Excellence in Business Journalism for my regular columns in HFM magazine.
Way to go.
Yeah, well, thank you. The recognition is nice, but more importantly, I think the award and the interest in our content, all of our content, speaks to the intense interest in market-driven healthcare reform out there in the public. There's a real hunger to learn more and drive purposeful change. I mean, it makes it a really exciting moment in the history of the industry.
No, that's great. Congratulations. And yeah, I definitely think we're on the right track, right? If you wanted to know about GLP-1 drugs, you should have started listening to the podcast 3 years ago, right?
That's right. Listening to Julie 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Julie,
yeah.
What are you talking about?
Remember,
you know,
I tripped over GLP-1 drug, the term GLP-1. We're like, what is she talking about? You know, we knew it by the brand names, right? We didn't know it by the category. So thank you.
Stick with me, kid.
Yep. Appreciate the education. I'll trade you a cicada story for a GLP-1 story anytime.
I'll take those any day of the week.
Okay. Thanks, Julie. Thanks, Dave. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to The Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.